Good morning. Thank you all for coming today, and thank you for the nice statewide look from California. That was kind of a nice intro for what I'll be presenting, which is going to take us down to a very small pilot project that was done in Oregon. In 2005, our Oregon Adult Immunization Coalition got together and decided on a few priority areas we wanted to work. One of those was looking at our immunization rates for 18 to 64 high-risk populations. So we, as a small work group, got together and started looking at some possibilities. These are my co-authors, by the way. So first we looked at our rates. We looked at the behavioral risk factor surveillance system, and we looked at immunization rates for folks with asthma, for flu, people with diabetes for both flu and for pneumococcal 23. And as you can see, all three of those rates are below the healthy people 2010 of 60%, that goal. And then that drop off in 05, of course, was due to the shortage. But we knew that this was a population that would be good to target. We have both an asthma coalition in Oregon and a diabetes coalition. They were both interested in looking at these populations. This data is easy to get, whereas some of the other high-risk populations, the data is a little harder to come by. So we thought we could use these as kind of a proxy population for the high-risk in general. And also in Oregon, our rates of asthma are higher than the national average, so we really wanted to focus on that population. So a little background about pharmacies and pharmacists in Oregon. We're a little different than California. Pharmacists got statutory authority in 2001 to immunize adults ages 18 and over. The Pharmacy Board and Association actually worked with the immunization program to redraft the legislation. We were concerned about going below 18 at that time. We also put it in place that the pharmacy protocols that the pharmacists operate under need to be approved by the immunization program, but they do not need to be signed by a physician. So pharmacists can independently sign their protocols, they just have to be pre-approved. So they pretty much use a standard model that we provide. They also are required to be certified and go through some of the similar education that Jeff went over. And lastly, they're required to report back to the primary care provider when they give doses. And we put in the legislation that in the future, if the state asked for information, they would be required to report to us. We now have a lifespan registry, so I think we're moving in that way where we're going to be asking the pharmacists to report all their data to us. And hopefully that will then supersede the need for the pharmacist to report to the primary care provider. So it should be a win-win for both of us. Anyway, then in 05, the legislation changed a bit. Pharmacists got permission to immunize down to age 15, but for flu only. So 15 through 17-year-olds, it's only flu. The opportunity to immunize in Oregon was strongly embraced by the Pharmacy Association, the board. Those two work very well together. All the pharmacy schools now have it as a standard part of their education so that everyone coming out is a certified immunizer. And the larger retail chains really got on board and have been very good public health partners. So we decided that working with the pharmacists would be a very good venue or intervention point to reach this 18 to 64 high-risk population. Typically, someone with diabetes or asthma is going to see their pharmacist more frequently than their physician, or at least that was our assumption. So we decided that would be a good venue, and we chose four retail pharmacy sites in Oregon, and then we chose two control settings that were also from the same retail corporate chain and matched somewhat on demographics, population served. It was a two-part intervention. We first did a client educational flyer. This was modified from a CDC flyer that they'd produced. It focused on just flu and pneumococcal, targeting our high-risk groups. English on the front, Spanish on the back. It was provided to all the four intervention sites to use with all their clients. The second part of the intervention was a reminder, a provider reminder. It was a pharmacy prompt. And as Jeff said, the pharmacists are all electronic now. So what we set up with the pharmacy chain was when a client came in with a prescription for one of the identified asthma or diabetes meds, they would put it into their data system and a prompt would come up for the pharmacist saying, please check the immunization status of this client. And then the pharmacists were given these little short little half sheet questionnaires, and they'd go out, ideally, the idea was they'd go out and they'd do a quick little interview of the client. Have you been immunized with flu? Would you like to get an immunization today? Would you like to set up an appointment to get one at a later time? Would you like to go back and talk to your own provider about it, or are you not interested? And we asked that both about flu and pneumococcal for the diabetes folks. We wanted to evaluate our project, and there are four areas we were looking in. We wanted to understand the implementation at the retail sites. How does this really work in a retail pharmacy setting? Is this something that can be incorporated into a workflow, and is this the appropriate place to target that population? Secondly, and so we did some in-depth interviews, and I'll go over some of those findings. Second, we wanted to measure client interest in vaccines, and that was from those little screening tools that the pharmacists use, and we asked them to use those and send those back to us so we could look at client interest. Third, we wanted to quantify the number of clients vaccinated, and we were given access to the pharmacy data to see how many doses they'd administered over the season and how many were administered to our target populations. And fourth, we really wanted to determine a true immunization rate because we assumed that some people would come, they'd get some of the educational intervention from the pharmacy, but then they'd go back to their own doctor and maybe get immunized there. Maybe their insurance covered it there. Maybe they were getting it at the work site. Maybe they wanted to confirm with their doctor that this was a good option. Unfortunately, midway through, we found out that wasn't going to work. The retail chain, because of HIPAA restrictions, couldn't release any contact information for their clients, so we couldn't do any kind of follow-up survey with them, so we had to drop that off. So let's talk about the interviews for a few minutes. We completed interviews at the four intervention sites. We interviewed the pharmacy manager and the pharmacy tech. In one of the sites, the management changed midway through the season, so we ended up interviewing both of those managers. We were looking for feedback on how it works in your system, how the intervention was actually implemented, because we suspected there was variation across the four sites. And then we wanted to know their overall reaction and impressions about how it worked for them, how they thought it worked for their clients. Additionally, the pharmacy staff who participated in the interviews were paid by their corporate office for an hour's worth of work in order to participate, so that they did have a little incentive. The educational flyer, all sites used the flyer. Some used it as a bag stuffer for every prescription that went out of the door. Some just left it on the counter for people to take as they wanted. Some used it all season. Some used it just in October and November. The computer prompt worked differently and didn't work in some stores. So in store A, there was a difference of opinion between the two staff people about how they thought that worked. Store B, they never got the prompt to work. So instead, they used their own system of recruiting, and they sent reminder letters to the target population to get them in the door. Store C said they used the prompt some, but they also used intuitive methods to identify the target population. We never really got at what that was, but we're curious. And then Store D said they used it all season long. The screening tool that then the pharmacist then used with the client, again, had some varied implementation. Most said they used it as a screening guide or a conversation guide to find out where folks were. We found out early on from the pharmacies, once we kind of said, let's go forward, they said, well, we'll get the same client in 3 or 4 times a month, and we don't want to screen them every single time. So a lot of the clinics, the site said, we're only going to use it in the month of October, or maybe October, November. And can you fix this prompt so it identifies people who've already been screened? So we tried to do that, and I think that was a limited success there. Overall, the implementation was varied across sites. Some of the themes that came up, it was the workload was a real challenge, and trying to fit this in when you've got a very busy workday, especially during flu season, is very difficult. A few of the sites thought, you know, this is a great idea, but it really would be more useful in a site that's not immunizing as well as we are. There was kind of a universal feeling that we needed more education and more buy-in, especially at the corporate level. Because this was a pilot, the corporate chain said, yes, go ahead, but it wasn't like a blanket, you know, corporate-wide policy so that they really felt like they had to do it, for one. And then there's just not really time to intervene in an educational way with pharmacists because of the way they're set up. We went in to visit at one point and brought pizza, And people would stop by and grab a piece of pizza, and they'd have to go back to serving clients. And we were right there in the center of the pharmacy with everybody moving around serving clients. And it just wasn't, they didn't do staff meetings, which in a clinic you often do, a morning staff meeting before the day starts. That just wasn't an opportunity for the pharmacy. So it was really hard training-wise. Okay, so let's switch to the client's interest. From those half screening sheets, we looked at who was interested and who wasn't. What isn't shown in these pie charts is that 38% of the clients said they'd already received their flu vaccine, and a quarter of the clients said they'd already received their PPV vaccine. So those folks aren't included. These are the folks that said they hadn't received anything yet. How interested were they? And we had about, for the flu, the 9% and 23%, those are folks that said that yes, they were interested in getting it from the pharmacist, either today for the 9% or at another date. Another 45% said they were interested from their own provider, with a quarter of the folks not interested at all. The story for PPV was a little bleaker, with almost 50% of the clients not interested in PPV at all, and only about 15% interested in getting it from a pharmacist. So let's start with the PPV doses. We looked at doses administered over the two seasons, and the story gets worse. So in the pilot sites, there are only 64 doses of pneumococcal given to folks under the age of 65 in the four pilot sites over two seasons. And only one shot was given to one of our target population who came in with asthma or diabetes. So I didn't graph that. The control sites, it was just half of that. So 32 shots were given in the control sites and zero for the target population. The flu doses look a little bit better. So in the pilot sites, we increased the number of doses from about 2,100 to over 2,800 from one season to the next. The control site had one additional flu dose that was administered. Looking at our target population, the percent of them that came in the door who actually walked out with the vaccine, we did see a measurable change in our pilot sites, small but measurable. It went up from about 7.5% to 9.5%. The control sites, there was not a measurable difference. It went from like 8.1 to 8.6% change. At the end of, did I just go the wrong way? Yes. Okay, so this splits it down by store. So the stores on the left, stores A through D, are the intervention sites, and the ones on the right, stores Y and Z, are the control sites. As you can see, three of the intervention sites, three of the four stores, did have an increase in percent of target population vaccinated. But only store C had a measurable change. The increases ranged from 1 to 6 percentage points, and that's site C had a 6 percentage point increase. Not huge, but measurable. The interesting part about this was that store B and C were the two stores where the prompt didn't really, store B, the prompt didn't work, so they did an actual letter. And store C was the one who used the intuitive way of identifying the target population. But I think the interesting thing with stores B and C is those folks, we had some continued contact with them because the prompt wasn't working. And there was quite a lot of enthusiasm. Those managers really wanted to make it work, so they found other ways to make it work. So I think their buy-in was greater. Okay, so limitations. We weren't really able to observe implementation, which was unfortunate. We tried to do these visits and we saw a little bit, but it was hard to get a good sense of how it really worked on the day-to-day basis. And we also weren't able to measure any additional interventions that these sites might have done. Like I said earlier, we weren't able to follow up with clients afterwards to see if the intervention from their perspective made any difference. And in Oregon, we have this pharmacy chain, there's a lot of rotating pharmacists. So although there's a pharmacy manager, if one of their pharmacists is out sick, they'll bring someone else in for a few days. And that person may or may not have gone through any kind of training around this. So the staff inconsistencies affected things, we think. So, interventions by pharmacists, we think, likely have some positive impact on uptake from 7.5% to 9.5% for immunizations. We found that the flu interest was about a third of the population was interested, but only 15% of the population eligible for pneumococcal were actually interested in getting it from a pharmacist. And we think there are a couple reasons for that. One, you might remember, you know, almost 50% of the people with diabetes weren't interested in all. So I think there's additional education that needs to happen with that population. It could be that the others were better medically managed than we anticipated and that they really wanted to do it with their doctor and talk with their doctor about it. The big thing that pharmacists raised was the reimbursement piece. If the client's 65 and older, they can bill for that pneumococcal shot, but under 65, the chance for the pharmacist to actually get reimbursed is very low, and patients don't want to pay out of pocket. They can get it from their provider for free. We did see it as a very good and unique opportunity to partner with our pharmacy folks, and it's helped strengthen those relationships. Acknowledgements for some of the groups that we worked with. And questions?
Thank you, Martha. Thank you, Martha. Thank you to the other panelists. Okay, we now have opportunity for questions and answers. So any questions? Yes, sir.
Hi, I'm Stan Schaefer from Rochester, New York, one of the only two states that doesn't allow pharmacists to vaccinate.
Soon.
I'm sure we'll be the last one, if ever. But anyway, I have a question for Jeff. You mentioned that fee-for-service Medicaid could be billed for immunizations provided in pharmacies. I'm specifically interested in the adolescent population. Since VFC covers vaccinations for adolescents who are on Medicaid, does that mean that you receive VFC vaccine, or was there some special arrangement that you would be paid in lieu of it to provide vaccine?
Yeah. So for the state Medicaid program, it's only adults and only flu that they'll reimburse for.
Okay.
And just to answer, Stan, there are some states that have signed pharmacists up for their VFC program, but it is state by state specific. Other questions?
For Jeff and Tammy, one of the objectives that you had in one of the slides said communication. There was resistance from the pharmacy group. I was quite surprised that only 4 out of 8, half of the pharmacy chains that are involved in the survey, were willing to work with the medical group regarding communication. Can you go in detail about what that was exactly? I'm quite surprised that only half were encouraged to do it.
So I'll take that, because I did the surveys for them. Well, what happened was when we asked them about communication with the medical home, pharmacists have gotten different feedback from physicians, right? Because oftentimes, if you don't know the pharmacy world, when there's a problem with your prescription, you call in, it's very unlikely you get to talk to the physician. You usually just get the front office. So when they call to relay information about vaccinations, it's the same response. So the actual communication with it has been difficult. And that's why I think, as was pointed out, the registry would probably solve a lot of people's problems, which is the medical offices don't have time to receive the information, and the pharmacies are trying to figure out how to get the information to them. So perhaps an intermediary, like a registry, would be a great idea. But actually, we're not allowed yet in California to do that.
And let me just add to that, and what we found nationwide is it's very variable in terms of how physicians' offices want to get that information, and we've had pharmacists who've tried all kinds of innovative things, of sending labels to the physicians' offices that all they have to do is take and put on the chart, to sending once a week a list of all their patients, and it's variable in terms of how physicians' offices want it. The other avenue, too, that we're hoping is with the electronic health records and getting pharmacists connected into that, that they can also share that information electronically that way. So we've got some tests that are being done out there, but no consistent method across the board at this point. Yes, ma'am.
Yes, Edie Miller, again, from upstate New York. I don't know, do you know what New York's problem is? but a couple other questions along with that. What is the public health involvement? Is there any hands-on in most of these states, or different? You can only speak for your states probably, besides the education role, is there any hands-on, or how does that work?
You guys want to touch the personnel? Well, touch from now.
Public health.
Well, I'll try to answer that. I think that this is still something that in California we're grappling with exactly how we want to take the lead or really to be involved in a meaningful way. And I think that we're really approaching this rather slowly and cautiously, maybe partially a resource issue, like I know it is with the registry, because for the 2010 goal, obviously getting children 0 to 5 into the registry is the goal that we're looking at the gun barrel now. And since pharmacies aren't serving that population, resources are not going to go in that direction at this point. Not to say that they won't later on.
Martha, and then I'll take it from a...
Quickly from Oregon, I think the big plus for us was getting them involved in our coalitions. They're very active coalition partners. They want to do the right thing. They want to be seen as providers. In Oregon, new legislation just passed that actually gives them more of a provider status, so we think that might help with their billing issues. We've also brought them to the table around preparedness activities and doing some preparedness kinds of mass clinics and exercising. So we're making some connections in a few different areas, and they're getting involved in a few of our, not only our immunization coalition, but our asthma and our diabetes coalitions. And that's, I think, really helped.
And that's a great segue, Martha. Thank you for bringing those up, because we're seeing a lot of the public health departments of not just looking at pharmacists as providers of immunizations, but there are other health care conditions that they're looking at. And so there's becoming a more active involvement, and the preparedness area is another way that a lot of these public health departments are bringing in the pharmacists, not just for immunizations, but medication distribution and monitoring and so forth. Real quickly about your question in New York, that's a great example of where public health departments are actually working with pharmacy to try to get that legislation passed. And so they're actually taking a lead. As a matter of fact, in New York City, anybody here from the New York City Department? This is one of their top three priorities that they have on their list, because they see the access of pharmacists as being crucial if they're going to prepare for any future event that may happen in their state. And so we're seeing that occur, a lot of collaboration with public health coalitions. And one of the things, if you're having trouble connecting with your pharmacist in your area, send me an email and I'll get you connected with them.
Great. Hi. Just a quick question for Martha. That was some interesting data. The piece about the asthmatics and diabetics, about a third of them, I think you said, were interested in getting a flu vaccine in the pharmacy. Was it really just a third, or was the two-thirds that didn't want to get the vaccine in that setting, did part of them already have the vaccine, or possibly, was it really just they preferred to get it in a different setting?
Mm-hmm. Those two pie charts excluded folks who said they'd already been vaccinated.
Okay.
So it really was just a third that said for the flu that they were interested in getting vaccinated today at the pharmacist or making an appointment at the pharmacy. Whether that shifted as the season went on, who knows? But I think a lot of those folks, given that age group, their insurance may have covered it better if they went to their own provider. They might have had opportunities at the workplace to do it, and so they were just waiting until they went to their regular venue for the shot.
Was any of the remainder just not interested in getting flu vaccines at all, or is it just...
Yeah, there was a quarter of the population that wasn't interested in flu vaccine, and there was about 47% of those folks were not interested in getting pneumococcal.
Okay.
At all.
And just to follow up on that, too, the one slide I showed in the intro that showed the increase for the diabetic patients, those were in pharmacies that are actually doing specific diabetes care projects, something where we have termed, if you may have seen it in the press, there's the Asheville projects, and as well as what we call the 10 city challenges, where pharmacists are actually working specifically with patients with diabetes, with hypertensive patients and high cholesterol patients, and working on managing their disease states. And part of that whole regimen that they're working on is the whole area of immunizations, and they're focusing that question, that check with the patient when they're in there working with them to make sure that they get vaccinated. And we're showing those type of focused activities are increasing immunization rates. And so that's where we as a profession are trying to move towards more of that disease state management. We're really making sure that immunizations are part of that regimen that you work up with the patient.
Can I ask you a question, Mitch?
Yeah.
For those two projects, are those pharmacists getting some kind of reimbursement or pay to do that more extended management of this diabetes?
Yeah, they're getting paid for the patient management services for the diabetes. They're also getting paid to do the immunizations when they do it, but it's part of the overall package of the patient care package they were delivering.